It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 8th day of July, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin. And I apologize for yesterday's absence, but, well, it's funny how the universe plays the game sometimes. Because even if I had been here and everything had been ready to go, wouldn't have gone. Because sometimes the damnedest things happen. And, you know, from the file called Adventures in Non-Commercial Broadcasting, we have this. You know that old saying, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the king was lost. For want of the king was lost. Yes. Well, had that situation yesterday. Because, you know, some of this equipment in this studio is every bit of, 17 years old? Something like that. And one of them is the big old gooseneck mic boom that holds up the great big heavy Electrovoice RE20, not golden, not EIB microphone. By the way, Rush Limbaugh is still dead, which is still cool. And the boom itself is the stand that affixes to the desk is iron. Oh, it's rock solid iron. This is the power of iron. And then there's the boom, and it is made of aluminum. And it's got these really strong springs that, after all these years, are still strong and allow the micro. Yeah, right. But there's the one little piece of plastic that holds together the little piece of metal that extends and onto which the microphone itself affixes, that is to say, threads. It's plastic. And two nights ago, it gave up the ghost. Everything else about the boom is great. But it, in fact, went to its long home. Mm-hmm. And I had a spare. But in the ongoing efforts to do repairs around here, things got moved around, and God alone knows where my spare gooseneck boom is. And so that occasioned a great search for a replacement, because an RE20 is not something you can just hold there like you're some sort of game show MC. No. No, not like that at all. And so consequently, there was no microphone yesterday evening. There was also no internet, because we had some whopping big thunderstorms come through. Rain drops the size of canned hams, and the internet immediately ran under the bed and hid. I wish I was kidding. I just sat in slack-jawed amazement at the workings of the goddess of irony. Mm-hmm. So, if I had been sitting here ready to go, there wouldn't have been a program. So I apologize for my absence, but it was well worth it. Sometimes my life of the last 10 months or so feels like a bit of a video game. And, in video games, you unlock achievements. And I unlocked an achievement yesterday. I now have all three of my gatekeeper letters. Mm-hmm. All three. And so I've leveled up. I've got everything, I think, necessary to take the next steps toward further authenticity. And it's most exciting. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so that means we send out thanks to our 7th and 8th day of the month subscribers, partial sponsors of the program who help to keep independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting on the air. And so that means thank you to Dwayne. And thank you very kindly to Marsha. Thanks as well to Susan up in the Great Northwest. Thank you very kindly to James. Thank you so very much. Thanks as well to David, and thank you as well to Brendan. It's all so very helpful. Because for some reason or another, it's just a little difficult to meet things like fundraising goals these days, and it gets a little bit frightful. So, what does that mean? Well, that means that from I don't know what to do about yesterday. I don't like to include days I'm not here in fundraising. With that not being the case, it's something like it's something like $522 or something like that to bring us up even with the evening. And there'll just be a $300 hole this month because of, yesterday. But that it's not as grim as it may seem because we've got a challenge on the table. Thank you very kindly to our pal Nidia, who has put a $50 challenge on the table to herald the lawsuit for transgender rights against what Nidia describes as my former employer, PEIA. PEIA of West Virginia, the Public Employees Insurance Agency. They're being sued to compel coverage of hormone replacement therapy and all other necessary medical procedures related to the transition of trans people. So thank you for that, Nidia. And if that challenge is met, we'll get down to 422, and that'll be fantastic. Also, this, get out the hockey puck. Jeffrey jumps right in to start the journal. So it was on this day in 1865 that four conspirators were hanged for their part in John Wilkes Booth's conspiracy to assassinate Abraham Lincoln and Secretary of State William Seward. Get a load of this. One of the conspirators who was hanged just happened to be named Lewis Powell. Mm-hmm. Now, many times have I walked past that little corner. Well, not quite. Yeah, I think maybe it is a corner. Maybe it's one door down. Townhouse in China, in D.C. in Chinatown, wherein it was noted was the nest that hatched the assassination egg. And for that, they hanged a woman who, just curiously, was merely the owner of the boarding house. She had no part in whatsoever in the assassination plot, but they hanged her because somebody needed hanging, and why not hang a woman? Precisely. And interestingly, that was another instance in which the Supreme Court of the United States said, nah, don't! And the government of the United States said, fuck the Supreme Court, and hanged her anyway. Mm-hmm. But there's some irony in that Lewis Powell reference, because Jeffrey notes, Another man named Lewis Powell, about 100 years later, would become a Supreme Court justice as he was appointed by Richard Nixon in 1971. Of course, Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell came up with the Powell Memo, a corporate blueprint to dominate democracy. It was written in 1971 to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Lewis Powell Memo, once again considered to be a blueprint for corporate domination. And ironically, to whom was this memorandum submitted at the Chamber of Commerce? Yes, the Powell Memo was submitted to none other than a man by the name of John Booth. And Booth granted the task of sharing and delineating the Powell Memorandum, a real thorn in the side to democracy. On the face of it, the Powell Memo was totally fascist. Well, good job, Jeffrey. And speaking of face-offs, the Tampa Bay Lightning won their second Stanley Cup in a row last night. I don't know about you, but Tampa, Florida just doesn't make me think of ice hockey. Amazingly, in the warm climate of Central Florida, maybe, there's water polo. Why can't there be water hockey? Never mind. Amazingly, the warm climate of Central Florida, the Tampa hockey team draws some very good crowds, but those warm weather people just don't like baseball, as the Rays can't seem to draw flies. I know, and they even turn in some decent baseball. Speaking of hockey, let's have some food porn and talk about a puck today, as famous Chef Wolfgang Puck's birthday, who is now pimping some shipping company over, well, on any number of channels probably, but I noticed it over on MSNBC because I tune in my filthy morning habit. Yes, happy birthday to Wolfgang Puck, Jeffrey offers. Hard to believe you're 72. I always thought you would be in your, wait for it, I really thought you would remain in your foodies forever, 40s. Oh, that giraffe. Might have should have left him with the dog down in Georgia, Joey. This has been Joey's Journal for the Thorn in the Side Thursday, with Giraffe looking for the matches to light a birthday candle and burn up the Powell Memo. $10 Burn the Powell Memo challenge on the table to go with Nidia's Sue the Bejesus Out of the PEIA challenge. And Steve in New York is going to put on a $10 challenge. Jeffrey used the term hanged, which is the correct word. Many use hung. So six letters plus four letters makes the $10 challenge. Now, I got to go back and see if I was editing on the fly. Jeffrey got it right. Hanged. And it is true. Hanged is the proper past tense of to hang. Because when you say that, well, never mind, we're not going to talk about anybody being hung. Okay, we're just not going to do that. We're not going to take the program into the gutter this early. Nope, just not gonna. Can't make me. Mm-mm. So now we have $70 worth of challenges on the table, which would get us, almost down to having fundraising complete for this past Tuesday. Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for the challenges to Joey and Giraffe and to Nidia and to Steve in New York. Also, a note to begin the program. By the way, if you'd like to enhance your listening experience, as is always the case here at the Horn, jump on into the chat room. It's a fine and dandy Thorn in the Side Thursday today. If you go over to headon.live and click on chat room right this very instant, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole. Well, not really early now. It's 13 past the hour. That's not a time check, really. But you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jeremy in Vermont and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, is nonetheless a wise one and does not fold space into things that are flaming hot like the man cave. He is capably assisted. He is capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve. From Georgistan. Billable Rick says, give yourself a gnur for water hockey. Oh, well, is that two gnurs in two programs? Oh, dear. Okay, Billable, you want to be that way? That's fine. There is water hockey, Randy Radar notes. It's played in the bottom of a water-filled pool at the YMCA in Bar Harbor, Maine. It involves the players holding their breath a lot. I'll be damned. Are there sticks? Slapshot really would take on a kind of a new and interesting. Yeah, in fact, Sparky notes he's doing chores outside in 107-degree heat. The house chores are 77 degrees. I think I'd go with the house chores, but that's me. But as I was saying, Ron in Raleigh has a note because unmentioned thus far is the assassination in Haiti that is presently roiling that country. There's been a another update, and we'll get to that in just a second. Well, let's get to the update first. It appears that there's at least one American citizen who have been detained in Haiti following the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. And according to Haitian officials, there may be two, which, well, it jibes with what was originally said, that foreigners were involved in the attack in which, and it was quite coordinated, really, in which the assassins went straight in and murdered the president of Haiti right in his own presidential palace. The Haitian government, under its acting acting prime minister, Claude Joseph, has declared an état de siège, a state of siege. And so basically martial law is obtains in that poor, tormented country. You might recall some years back, in fact, I think we reported on it here on the Horn at the time, former liquor supply officer and senatorial son, fortunate son, Marion Pat Robertson, once claimed that an earthquake struck Haiti because of devil worship. Utterly oblivious. And, you know, but that's what he's good at, making sure nobody, none of the people gumming their creamed corn and oatmeal who tune in and then, you know, send Marion their Social Security checks. He made sure that they make sure that they don't actually pay any attention to the real political, geopolitical nightmares that that obtain in that, again, that tormented tormented country. Half of the island is Haiti. The other half is the Dominican Republic. Furious Haitians are also going about trying to find the people who did the murder. And things are rapidly deteriorating. Haiti has been in a bad way for months. Who am I kidding? Centuries. Helen Lalime, who is the number one UN official in Haiti, said that a group of so-called suspects had, quote, taken refuge in two buildings in the city and are now surrounded by police. She had previously briefed the UN Security Council. And the ambassador to the United States from Haiti, Boki Edmond, described the assailants as well-trained professionals, killers, commandos. There have been shootouts. Six suspected murderers are in custody. Three foreign nationals have been killed. And, of course, in the long list of countries that are that suffer horrible domestic intranquility in this hemisphere, Haiti probably leads the list. And that brings me to what Ron and Raleigh wrote. A word about Haiti, if I may. The U.S.-backed, U.S. puppet president of Haiti has been assassinated by alleged Haitian Americans, reasons as yet unknown. President Moise was the handpicked successor to President Martelly, who was forced on the Haitian people by Hillary Clinton. Martelly was third in balloting, but Mrs. Clinton forced the Haitian legislature to move him into contention for the presidency. The pattern in Haiti from the jump vis-a-vis the U.S. has been to keep Haiti poor and destitute. After the Haitian Revolution in 1804, when a bunch of slaves had the temerity to throw off their colonial slave masters, the U.S. ignored them until the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation in 1862. Although Haiti was the second country in the Western Hemisphere to free itself from its colonial masters, the idea of a servile insurrection in the U.S. kept this country from recognizing Haiti. Moving forward, the U.S. has backed every murderous right-wing authoritarian dictator in Haiti, from Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc Duvalier and the vicious Tonton Macoute secret police. Since then, the U.S. has installed and backed dictator after dictator after dictator as long as they toe the U.S. line. The last truly democratically elected Haitian president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was spirited out of the country in the dark of night by the U.S. military to exile in Africa. A clip was shown today on Majority Report of Joe Biden in 1994 saying that if Haiti sank in the ocean, no one would care. That is the kind of quasi-racist shit that Biden has spouted since he rode to success in his anti-busing campaign in 1972. Bill Clinton forced the Haitians to lower tariffs on the few commodities they exported, which gutted the Haitian economy. The International Monetary Fund has screwed Haiti on numerous occasions. The U.S. will never allow Haiti to run its own affairs. Imposing our will on Haiti is in and of itself the reason we do this. Well, it's the Monroe Doctrine in action. I'm so old I can remember being in elementary school and being told that the Monroe Doctrine was a good thing, that it was the grand and noble United States of America telling the colonial powers of the rest of the world to stay the hell out of the Western Hemisphere, that by God, this was the sphere of influence of the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on Earth, in the universe today, forever under God. Mm-hmm. The problem is, for instance, something, it is possible to be sympathetic to Haiti and to say something like, if Haiti sank beneath the ocean, no one would care. Because you can say that because the rest of the world doesn't give much more of a damn about Haiti than any other nation. Probably in part because, I mean, for instance, unless I'm mistaken, money leaves Haiti every year, or perhaps, I don't know, maybe it's finally paid off. But with that revolution in 1804 that Ron and Raleigh referenced, the French still demanded that they be paid because Haiti was their island. Of course, they also considered the people working the sugarcane plantations to be their human beings. Slavery was more than an English-speaking problem. I mean, Dutch, French, Jesus, the Belgian, German. Everybody in Europe wanted a colony in Africa or the New World. And slavery went hand in hand with it. Ugh. Disgusting. And for eons, Haiti has gone begging. Of course, we've supported dictators in Chile. We've assassinated democratically elected leaders in Chile, Argentina, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua. Remember, as I noted the other night, General Smedley Butler said he figured out the nature of the racket he was involved in while serving as a corporate enforcer via the United States Marine Corps in Nicaragua, and he said, I was an enforcer for United Fruit. And that brought us the tome, War is a Racket. And Haiti itself, it's interesting because there is, you know, there's an international border on the island of Hispaniola that separates Haiti from the Dominican Republic. and the Dominican Republic is well-forested and in considerably better shape than its neighbor to the west, Haiti, that has been resource-scoured for centuries. I mean, after all, the Dominican Republic was nice enough back 20 or more years ago. It was nice enough that a rotund right-wing gas bag by the name of Rush Limbaugh decided to visit there. Yes. You may remember some of the salient details of that visit, because that's where he got busted with a bottle of Viagra in someone else's name whilst on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic, which, by the way, is also infamous for its sex trade featuring, wait for it, but you already know, little boys. Mm-hmm. So that's Haiti getting us started on this thorn in the side Thursday. Ah, thank you. Thank you, Barbara, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Haiti finished paying reparations to France in 1947. The funny thing is, Haiti never owed a damn dime to France. You have to pay off your colonialist enslaving oppressors in order. Oh Jesus, it still makes me sick at my stomach. Let's see. It was from 1825 to 1947, Ron and Raleigh points out. Approximately $21 billion. Imagine what $21 billion over the course of 200 years, 222 years, would have done for that nation. But you wouldn't want a prosperous majority black nation that close to the United States, would you? It's the same reason we had a shit hemorrhage over Cuba, or Cuber, as John F. Kennedy Jr., or John F. Kennedy, sorry, that's from the previous program, too. If John F. Kennedy would have called it Cuber, and John F. Kennedy Jr., by the way, is still not going to run for president or be vice president alongside Nitwit Nero, not least of the reasons being that John F. Kennedy Jr. is still dead, but also because even if he were not, he, a liberal New England Democrat, would never align himself with a squalid Aravist nouveau riche. It's French night, seeing as we're talking about Haiti. It's French night on the horn. Ass bag, like COVID Caligula. I know. Rusty wants to know, do the water polo ponies get those nose clips when they're under the water? Rusty, yeah. Okay, sure. Got to be a cowbell in there somewhere. Why not? The U.S. was the enforcer, Flavio says. The overthrow of Haiti's president, Vilbrun Guillaume Sam, and subsequent unrest resulted with President of the United States Woodrow Wilson ordering the invasion of Haiti to protect American business interests on 28 July 1915. 6 weeks later, the United States seized control of Haiti's customs houses, administrative institutions, banks, and the national treasury. Yeah. With the United States using a total of 40% of Haiti's national income to repay debts to American and French banks for the next 19 years until 1934. Under U.S. government control, a total of 40% of Haiti's national income was designated to repay debts to American and French banks. Haiti would pay its final indemnity remittance to National Citibank in 1947. Yeah, don't fuck with us, especially if we're bigger than you. Because we will fuck you up. And remember, the Louisiana Purchase even traces its roots to the French colonial misadventure in Haiti. The French sent French troops under Napoleon. I mean, Napoleon sent them. You know, the little corporal. And they were decimated or more by malaria, yellow fever. And that's when Napoleon realized that he would break himself trying to maintain his grip over Haiti. And because he was badly in need of cash, sold off all the French claims in North America to Thomas Jefferson, who did not have the constitutional authority to make the purchase, but said, Constitution? What Constitution? Because Jefferson, during the ratification, had not been exactly what you would call a fan. But he had been shipped off to France to buy wine and books and quietly continue his affair with Sally Hemings, and so was kind of out of the way in that regard. But if you're a history teacher, says Flavio, don't you dare teach that bit of history of the U.S. Haiti in schools. No. Well, I mean, and you know, that's what makes a term like critical race theory so convenient. Because anything about American history that you don't like, you can call critical race theory. Well, that's just critical race theory because America ain't never wanted nothing but the very best for them Haitians. See how it works? Sure. So that's a beginning, and only a beginning, to the program this evening. God knows there is an abundance of other stuff I want to get into, and one of them I'm a little bit late getting to it, but I have mentioned the fact that fake hillbilly J.D. Vance, who is more like the little intern to the tiger mom at Yale, that horrible woman who, among other things, mentored young law students to go and work for Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer and getting all his debts paid by mystery people. Yeah. People of a certain age will recall a game, a board game called Mystery Date. Well, Brett had one of those. Well, it may not be a mystery to Brett, but it's a mystery to the United States, and it would still be nice to find out who the kind and generous soul was for, yeah, and what Brett has to do to pay it off. We know what the answer to that is. He can get away with occasionally voting against his master's wishes, but when it comes to outright American corporatism and or religious theocracy, he'll damned well vote the way his owners want him to vote. But anyway, J.D. Vance was mentored by the same person, the tiger mom, who mentored his Brat Kavanaugh's future clerks when he was on the D.C. circuit. And now J.D. Vance is, of course, a legitimate, I guess we have to use that term, don't we? A legitimate candidate for the Republican nomination for Senate in the state of Ohio. And he's talking all that economic populism horse shit that he won't do a damn thing about as a Republican senator, because he will be completely in the pocket of the kinds of corporate interests that own Republican senators. It was, what, 2017 when Hillbilly Elegy hit the shelves in the U.S. and once again had multimillionaire media networks all a quiver. Trying to avoid using the word a titter here. All a quiver. because he had somehow pointed out or shown to them, and we'd already been through a frenzy of multimillionaires parachuting into Appalachia to find out what, you know, why is it them hillbillies is so fond of Donald Trump? And we, you know, that was during that benighted time when you couldn't, where you couldn't turn on a news channel without hearing economic anxiety, T. No, you couldn't do that. And so J.D. Vance, through his terrible book, I was never seduced by it. I know garbage when I see it, smell it. But he became the hillbilly whisperer and made a small fortune on the stupid book. And, you know, was a hedge fund guy and whatnot. And Rob Portman decided he don't want to be no senator no more. And so J.D. Vance said he did. So he's running for the Republican nomination for the Senate seat being vacated by Republican Rob Portman. Over on the other side is Tim Ryan, who's running for the Democratic nomination. Jesus, what? Tim Ryan tweeted last week, J.D. Vance and I have exactly one thing in common. Neither of us voted for Donald Trump. Ooh, that stings. Because again, J.D. Vance already got the he got the anointing, and you don't want to know what it's done with, by Nitwit Nero to be the Republican senator from Ohio. Mm-hmm. So that means that J.D. Vance had a problem. Yeah, by the way, Matt in San Francisco pointing out Hillbilly Elegy was a terrible movie as well. Oh, it was god-awful. It was soundly and thoroughly panned. Poor Glenn Close. Oof. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Matt, I thought... That must have been one of the nights you weren't tuned in. I told people, don't watch that. It's bad for your brains. It'll make them leak right out your ears. Oh, I'm so sorry, man. But then again, sometimes, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, you actually watch a film just to see how bad it is. We will look. Now, let me answer this. Just a second here. Sorry about the dead air. Okay. Anyway, J.D. Vance is now going to be a candidate. But, you know, he's got this ugly history of tweets that he had to try to scrub, not knowing that tweeting is forever. And that even though he deleted them, they're still going to be there. Tweets like, let's see here. It was 3:05 p.m. on the 23rd day of October 2016 when J.D. Vance tweeted, "This is cool. Evan McMullen is who I'm voting for this November." Yeah, he tried to delete that because J.D. Vance can't be critical of the God Emperor of the Republican Party. And also conceivably be senator from Ohio in the Republican Party. Because he said no small number of shitty things about Nitwit Nero. And now he is being, you know, J.D. Vance is being skewered all over the media for the coward that he is, for the lickspittle, the sycophant, the suck-up. Oh, I said hedge funder. No, he's a venture capitalist, J.D. Vance is. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And so he even went so far as to visit Mara Lardass to bend and kiss the ring and any other thing that Nitwit Nero might be proffering and wanting to have kissed. Ugh. Yeah. So that's a start. Sure. Oh, and what else? Well, there's so much else. Let's see. Let me check. Yeah. Yes. I'm a little late to the note, but... yes, in case anyone's wondering, this program is live for the 8th day of July. And as David in South Carolina Stan points out, J.D. Vance is also playing the victim, just like his hero, asking, "Why is Google hiding my website, jdvance.com? Daniel Dale responded, "Nonsense. Googled J.D. Vance website, and the site came up on page one. Googled J.D. Vance, and the site came up on page two behind his Twitter. Some new articles about him, the Amazon and HarperCollins pages for his best-selling book, and some bio pages. But, you know, this kind of... this plays with the maggot base. They're shadow banning me. They're shadow banning me. Stephen, New York, noting, so let me get this straight. A guy born between Dayton and Cincinnati off of I-75 in Ohio who's never lived in Appalachia is the authority on the people of Appalachia? Sure! Because God knows we can't be authorities on ourselves. Everybody else has to define us. And, you know, we can't all be mentored by the Tiger Mom, Steve. Please. Hellbilly Elegy. Ron and Raleigh says, as I wrote a while back, J.D. Vance was paid $45 million for the movie rights to this piece of trash. I feel sorry for Ron Howard. I think that Ron, being a West Coast guy, wouldn't know a real hillbilly if they pissed in his shoes. And, you know, oddly enough, and this is a funny thing about hillbillies, we generally don't go around pissing in people's shoes. I get your point, Ron, but the larger issue is he'd probably think a quart jar of Old Smoky moonshine was actual moonshine. Yeah, it's just, yeah. And it kind of blew my mind. I picked one up as a souvenir. What's it? Okay, I get the point, Steve in New York. Since J.D. Vance is officially a hillbilly, Steve in New York says, I'm officially a Sufist imam. Sure, why not? Yeah. But you remember that that TV show I was involved with a few years ago, Outsiders? It was a little late reaching us, but I got one as a souvenir, and it sits untouched and the seal unbroken in the cabinet that apparently my some member of my family used to tuck their hooch away in. But it's a quart jar of official, no kidding, Feral Family Moonshine. And it's got the Outsiders label on it and everything. And I'm going to let it sit in the back of that cabinet until it actually obtains value, which will be sometime, maybe the 6-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches who will worship us as God will find it someday. And so maybe it'll be elevated as part of some religious ritual, as they click and squeak at each other. But so I got that going, which is good. Yeah. I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the shelf. And the funny thing is, there's still two more bottles because not everybody looks at it. Nobody buys the mass-produced so-called moonshine around here, except the Tourons.
Mm-hmm.
That, by the way, is a new word that I've learned. You know, people who come here and drive slowly in the left lane. Yeah. So do I have to refer to Steve in New York as a Sufist imam now? I don't know. But, yeah, he's... Agnes is still pissed at Ron Howard because, you know, she remembers Ron Howard from A, the Andy Griffith Show, B, Happy Days, C, the good movies that he made, things like Apollo 13, and... Who conned him into that? But she still has not forgiven him. And I don't know how Ron Howard gets from day to day, with that being the case. What, David? David in South Carolina says, on the way to hell, just back from D.C., and now know again that there are signs on the road to hell that read 495 north, south, east, west, 395 north, south, east, west, 295 north, south, east, west, 95 north, south. You missed the fucking exit again. I know. Sometimes, Matt in San Francisco says, sometimes... when people tell me not to do something, it's the very reason I do it. Still evolving. Yeah, but I don't want to be her, Matt. I mean, please. There's bound to be another awful hillbilly movie. Never mind. But this contrarian, I understand. For I are one, too. Lee in New York asks, mass-produced moonshine, isn't that an oxymoron? One would think, but there's a huge market for it. And now they've got it. They got dill pickle moonshine. No shit. It's a jar of like dill pickle spears with some hooch poured on it. There's probably not two decent shots of booze in it. It's just a jar of pickles soaked in alcohol. People buy it. And the slices of apples soaked in alcohol, or the cherry pie filling soaked in alcohol. Hey, look here, we're at their liquor store. Let's buy us some of that hillbilly moonshine, Ethel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. But let's go on and find ourselves some more thorns for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, nothing's funnier than an American American legal resident who gets chopped into chutney by a brutal barbarian dictator from our partner in peace, the royal, noble, puissant, gracious, serene House of Ibn Saud. Yeah. According to the Yahoo Conspiracy Land podcast, back in October 2018, when Mohammed bin Bonesaw had Jamal Khashoggi chopped into teeny tiny pieces. Well, that's when Nitwit Nero picked up the phone and,
hey, Mo, see, we got the, there's these old,
They call the three, and they say, hey, Mo, I believe, yeah. Hey, Mo, just wanted to give you a call. Do you know anything about this?
The killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Kristen Fontenrose, who at the time was the director of Gulf Affairs at the National Security Council, said, the president would flat out ask, I mean, up to a dozen times on any individual phone call, whether it was with King Salman or with MBS, Mohammed bin Bonesaw, or both of them,
did you have any knowledge of this operation? Did you know this is going to happen? Did you give this order?
And of course, because he's a fucking simpleton, Mohammed bin Bonesaw and serene, noble, puissant, gracious King Salman said, we know nothing. We know nothing about that. We will fully investigate the crime of murdering Jamal. And as Ms. Fontenrose said, I mean, he would go back to it and back to it and back to it, trying to press them and telling them, you know, this will change everything, you guys. We got to know. We're with you. We're standing behind Saudi Arabia, but we got to get to the bottom of this. Was there a bone saw? Was there a bone saw? I mean, and then because he's such a laugh riot nitwit, Nero.
I've been in some difficult negotiations. I've never had to take a bone saw.
And then he was yucking it up with Mike Pompeo. You know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. you know, a little bastard's out of office now, but it's still funny, isn't it?
Have you ever had to take a bone saw to negotiations, Pompeo?
No, Mr. President. No, Donald, we... And the king said... Mohammed Bonesaw said, we didn't know anything about it. We're still trying to get to the bottom of this. Yes, King Salman and his wife, Steve in New York notes, Queen Haddock. Yeah, King Salman's queen say to him, not tonight, honey, I've got a haddock. Well, Smitty in Orlando, it's nice to hear from you. I hope you get to feeling better. I do indeed. Mass-produced moonshine? Stephen New York says, that reminds me of a story. When I was living in Northern Virginia a number of years ago, I was in a bookstore in a mall near where I lived in Pentagon City, Arlington. A person walked up to me who was a tourist and asked me if I could recommend a good Italian restaurant. As luck would have it, I knew a great place in Adams Morgan where the chef was actually from Italy, Venice, I think. The woman replied and said to me, No, I mean an Olive Garden. Now, I don't want to go beating on Olive Garden. It's a sad thing to note, but it's at least not horrible over in Beckley. There's another place called Pasquale Miro's. They're at least somewhat vaguely more Italian. But when it's what you got... Still, yeah. No, I mean an Olive Garden. Oh, Jesus. But the breadsticks. It's all about the breadsticks, right? Yeah, I think you're right. Randy in PA points out Ron Howard, I believe, also made the movie A Beautiful Mind. I think you're right. But Hillbilly Elegy will forever be the stinker. His Plan 9 from Outer Space that stains the rest of his oeuvre. Yeah. I told you it was going to be a Thursday. Oh, I guess we need to go back to. We've got another Marjorie Trader gangrene cue ball sighting. She's figured out that there's big money to be had in attacking Alexandria Ocasio Cortez. Well, you could do that, David. David's listening on the road. David from South Carolina, stand 81 South. I'm considering taking 81 South and coming back via Roanoke. The problem with that is that it jogs so it basically runs down the Blue Ridge Valley in a distinct southwesterly direction. But what you can do is when you get to Withville, I think, or somewhere thereabout, you can pick up 77. And that'll get you more on more of a southerly jog. But, God, 81 South through Virginia goes forever. It's like, I mean, it was longer than driving through Delaware, which is the biggest state in the Union, as far as I can tell, based on my journeys in 2019. No, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball has tweeted about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez 49 times this year. Just this year. And it's only July. She's done it from both her personal Twitter account and her government Twitter account. You might recall that she referred to AOC as a little communist from New York City. Mm-hmm. And she threw a hissy about that earlier in the week, too. Upping the ante to include all Democrats as communists. But it's a great fundraising hustle because Emory and Marvelline, they don't tweet, but they do hear about it on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and Newsmuck and Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. And they love it, and they reach for their pocketbooks every time. Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cueball is going to have one hell of a war chest coming into the 2022 midterms, and she doesn't even necessarily need it because that district in Georgia, well, it takes awful people to send an awful person to Congress. And that district in Georgia, and don't rely on me, Steve from Georgistan can tell you the same thing, is awful. It's absolutely bug sprayed crazy. It's a whole bunch, just one long decon party. And so it was today that she tweeted, China is going everywhere, locking up rare earth minerals to completely dominate the battery market. You can thank AOC and all the foolish Democrats who sold out America for buying into her Green New Deal that'll make the U.S. completely dependent on China. It might be worth noting here now that the federal government does not control the worldwide supply of rare earth elements that go into lithium-ion batteries. I mean, there is truth in the fact that China is engaging in intense efforts to make sure that they gain almost a monopolistic share on those rare earth elements. But that is hardly the fault of the United States government. Private industry, we're not yet an authoritarian fascist dictatorship like the People's Republic of China is. It's up to those titans of industry, those captains of commerce, to go out and do that. But nobody's gotten around to explaining that, or capitalism, or free market, or any of that sort of stuff, to Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball. No, because of course not. And she's never offered a blessed piece of legislation to facilitate American business going out. But Emory and Marvelline sitting in their matching Barca loungers down there in the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club, they don't know nothing about that. They don't care. And as Stephen New York points out, someone is living rent-free in someone's head. Ordinarily, I would agree, Steve, but in this case, I don't. This is just marketing. This is, you know, tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. This is just how you make your war chest if you happen to be a maggot member of Congress. You find somebody's back to ride. And it's been going on for eons. Republicans going back home to the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing folks at home and saying, see, I went to Washington, D.C., and I stood up to them panty-waist, sissy liberals who are soft on crime and everything else. I stood up to them and I said, we're going to be hard on crime. We're going to have a crime hard on. You see how it works? And this play, and see, she's a freaking superstar in right derp Sylvania. That's not a reference to Pennsylvania. It's just an imaginary place. But she is. I mean, she's the face. She's the face of the Republican Party. It ain't Dick in a Wig Genie. It's not Adam Kinzinger, anti-Trump Republican that he is. It's not Mike Pencil Neck Geek. It's Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cue Ball. You know, with an occasional assist from Lauren Bobblehead Boobert Clanny Oakley. These are the stars, your Jim Shorts Jordans and your Matt Gaetz betters. That's who they are. And you know what? Going all the way back to Lee Atwater, whose own brain hated him so much it rejected him. They know who their base are. And they play to them. And their base are fueled entirely by fear and bigotry and hatred. That's all. Oh, and a bit of a follow-up coming from Megan, because we had this story earlier. You remember Byron Tanner Cross, the guy that I would never allow around any of my grandkids because he's just sick and cruel, because he wanted to torment little kids because he wouldn't use their preferred name, their preferred pronouns, and their preferred gender over in the Loudoun County, Virginia school district. Well, he sued to be reinstated so that he could continue tormenting children. And, well, the court reinstated him. Well, now the Loudoun County Public Schools is appealing that decision to the Virginia Supreme Court. And it's noteworthy because we talked about this in regard to the potty case in the Supreme Court. That was brought by the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is just another one of those 501c3 grifts, or, you know, IRS code tax-exempt grifts, that it's a fundraising vehicle. It's not really so much about doing good lawyering. As Ian Millhiser pointed out, the Supreme Court will wait for a really good screw the LGBTQ community case brought by the Beckett Fund, because they're serious about having the good lawyers to really fuck marginalized communities. Well, the Alliance Defending Freedom is the group that's representing Byron Tanner Cross. And they said they'll be opposing the state Supreme Court accepting the petition of appeal. Public schools have no right to suspend someone simply for respectfully providing their opinion at a public meeting. The school district wants to force Tanner to endorse its ideals and shut down any opposing views. That violates the Constitution and laws of old Virginia, and so did the school's move to place Tanner on leave. Well, it seems to me that he wasn't suspended at all. I mean, he was suspended, but he wasn't suspended for what he said in the meeting. He was suspended for the fact that he refused. He stated publicly that he would refuse to follow the legitimate policy of the Loudoun County, Virginia School Board. And it was the only appropriate response, really, because you can't wait around for him to abuse a child before you do something. You act in the best interest of the child. And in point of fact, children. So one hopes that they have that Loudoun County has better lawyers, and I suspect they will, than Byron Tanner Cross does, because Byron Tanner Cross has a bunch of pettifogging grifters in the form of the Alliance Defending Freedom. I mean, notice that their Alliance Defending Freedom is not interested in defending the freedom of a little child in an elementary school being abused by Coach Byron Tanner Cross. Of Leesburg Elementary School. And it's worth noting that he never, he wouldn't have had the fodder to grunt and bark and hoot his way through it, that school board meeting, were it not for a truly horrible, bad, no good, awful, really, really abysmal piece of attempted journalism from 60 Minutes. That was the piece that turned a story about trans kids into a propaganda expose for the godforsaken, miserable, shit-eating TERFs and other people who despise trans kids. And, of course, being a fake, phony, baloney Christian, he couched it all in terms of, I'm speaking out of love for those who suffer with gender dysphoria. And he's going to manifest his love for gender dysphoria, or for kids who suffer with gender dysphoria, by making sure that he torments them over their gender dysphoria. Oof, these people. But anyway, just a couple of things. China. They are the number one country for raw materials in the electric vehicle battery supply chain. The U.S. is number 15. Somebody cue up Lee Greenwood and get the crowd at some sporting event chanting, we're 15! We're 15! Jesus. And yes, lithium is, I believe, a rare earth element. Randy pointing out, rare earth minerals go into regenerative braking magnets, and not, so far as I know, lithium-ion batteries, which use lithium and zinc. Lithium is a rare earth element. And it's lithium that she was complaining about, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball. Thanks for getting us started, to Jeremy in Vermont. Joey and Giraffe's challenge is met. Fuck off, maggot gangrene, who acts as if a shot is just like me having to tailor clothes for the Nazis while they beat me wearing my yellow star mask. Fuck you, Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cue Ball. Hear, hear to that, Jeremy. Yes, indeed. So that's met. So that means we're down to 502. There's a $50 PEIA sued for trans rights challenge, courtesy of Nydia, here in West Virginia. Thank you, Nydia. And a $10 a $10 challenge courtesy of Steve in New York. That will get us a little bit along the way. It would be great not to fall into a great big whopping hole this early in the month. Again, thank you. Hopefully, now that we've entered the second hour of the program, Nidia's challenge and Steve's will both be met. Oh, by the way, going back to the moonshine discussion, Arnold in PA says, I've had the pleasure of having homemade family recipe, the moonshine from the south as far north as Maine. Anything commercial, anything will not be appropriate. Oh, it also won't be moonshine. And then as far as Byron Tanner Cross is concerned, Arnold, and this is simply a statement of speculation, he says, as to Byron Tanner, I'd like to beat this guy's ass. I bet you could, Arnold, I bet you could. Stephen, New York, the Loudoun County troglodyte. Why would he want to work there anyway? How many times do we hear the believers in the free market tell us that if we don't like something, to not buy it or not shop there or not work at a place you don't like? Seriously, why does everything turn into some sort of grift with these weirdos? Because they're trying to take over the country. This is just a gentle reminder. If you look up Seven Mountains Mandate, it's a Dominionist Christian thing, and ADF is Dominionist, if nothing else. They identify seven areas of life in the United States, and they think of them as mountains, and they want to control each and one of them's media, another one's education, stuff like that, government, the courts, and they have to control them all. Meanwhile, as we travel with David from South Carolina, Stan, on the way back from D.C., 81 South to 64 East, I think I found it. 81 South to Stanton, then 64 East through Charlottesville, then bypass Richmond and back on 95 South. That'll work. I mean, that's a hard east jog, but it takes you through the Blue Ridge, and it's a beautiful drive, and you should still have a couple of hours of daylight to enjoy it in, David. I don't know how far you are from Stanton. Trying to think it. There's a little non. By the way, it'll be before you get there. It's somewhere around the original, the historical marker for the Cyrus McCormick farm. Oh, really? I know these things. I've driven I-81 so many times. But there's a great big huge. It's a huge mall of a truck stop, David, and it's got like a Pizza Hut and a Popeyes and stuff like that in it. But across the street from that is a little mom-and-pop truck stop. And they got homemade fried pies in there that'll make you weep. All kinds of it's so good. Those fried pies are just delicious. Pretty good other food, too. Good place to stop before you jog onto I-64, I think. Or maybe that's past. No, I don't think it's past I-64. Yeah, that'll get you there. But then, you know, you're going northeast to turn south. There's just no right way. But you would have to go all the way down to Withville to get on 77. 77 gets you out of Virginia and into North Carolina pretty quick. And you get a beautiful, beautiful view of the... In fact, I think our pal Joy from Ann Arbor... I think she recently saw this view on a little road trip. She's been through West Virginia, and it's been so exciting. She's had some cultural moments here, but she's also enjoyed the geography something fierce. She got to see the Silver Bridge and went to the Mothman Museum. I was so tickled to read that. But when 77 crosses, and by the way, 77 crosses out of Virginia and into North Carolina, and the last county you're in Virginia is Carroll County, Virginia. And somewhere around, I think, 1885 or so, my great-grandfather left Carroll County, Virginia, and literally followed the New River and came to a stopping place just out the road from where I am now. And found a woman that he fell in love with and set up a farm. Set to farming. He's a banjo player. And every night he would read from the Bible to his children, play the banjo for them, cut up an apple for them from his own orchard. He'd cut the apple, play the banjo, read the Bible. They'd say their prayers, send them off to bed. And one of those little children, one of those little girls, was my grandmother. And she told me these stories. And every night when he came, he was terribly, terribly allergic to dust and pollen. But he would still be out there in the fields with his scythe and his sickle and his, and he would reap his wheat and his barley and his oats by hand. And he was a teetotaler. And every evening, and I've got his glass. I have his glass. I had a cut glass goblet. And every evening, my great-grandmother would bring him a glass of warm sugar water. Which was particularly funny the first time we watched the first Men in Black movie, and the bug says, "Give me sugar in water." It was like Edgar, but it wasn't Edgar. He was wearing an Edgar suit. He wanted sugar water. My life, my brain. Yeah, in where was it that President Biden went yesterday and threw big time shade at Mitch McConnell? Gave him grief, McConnell, for voting against the American Recovery Act, and then going back to Kentucky and saying, "I voted against it, but you're going to get somewhere between $4 billion and $7 billion." In talking to elected officials here in the state, I'd just like to urge you to spend it wisely. Which is another way of saying don't spend it on that people who would actually benefit from it. Give it to political cronies. But Joe Biden did, in fact, as Flavio points out, troll the living bejesus out of him. He's bragging about it, Biden said. He's bragging about it in Kentucky. Look it up, man. You get the idea sometimes that Joe enjoys his job. Okay, so the debate continues. Apparently, lithium is not a rare earth mineral. Randy pointing out it's in a whole different place on the periodic table than the rare earth elements that are considered to be lanthanides. Knew I should have paid more attention in high school chemistry. But a lot of the times when you hear rare earth elements discussed, what they really are talking about is lithium. And it reminds me of something that Van Jones said way, way, way back in the dim mists of time when he was, is it before the Obama administration threw him under the bus because he offended Glenn Beck? Some such shit as that. It was 2009 is exactly when it was. It was 2009 in D.C. at PowerShift. And in his address, he said, "We have to address issues of economic and environmental justice, or all this talk about a clean, sustainable energy economy will come to nothing. It'll be for naught because we will then be fighting wars for the lithium to make the batteries to run our clean, green tanks." And obviously that had a big impact on me, because he was absolutely right. And then he got a job at CNN and everything went to hell. Oh, well. So here we are, almost an hour and a half through the program. We've got $60 more in challenges to meet, and we badly need to meet those. Por favor. So that we don't have a too big a number for Friday on the front porch, which is tomorrow. And it being a Thursday, we have the Green News Report from Brad and Desi. And we haven't heard from them in a while because they've been on I don't think it was a vacation of their choosing. I think there was some sort of technical difficulty along the way. But if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you're perfectly willing so to do, or perfectly welcome so to do. Your willingness is your determination. But the stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And jump right in if you'd like to. And we'll get to the conversation right quick-like. I get it. I get it, Brother Deacon. And before we go, something that I saw earlier and Sparky pointed out as well. We talked about the fact that Toyota made a howling error saying that they were going to keep giving money to the insurrection caucus in Congress because they didn't feel like it was their job to talk about who was right and who was wrong when it comes to insurrection against constitutional governments in the United States of America. This was all based on information that Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington published last month. They gave $55,000 to 37 different elected GOP members of Congress who were, at the very least, tepid about, and some of which were actively supportive of, the insurrection of January 6th. And among other things, the Lincoln Project had something to do with it. They brought to bear an ad against Toyota that apparently caught their attention. Speaking to the Detroit News, the Lincoln Project co-founder Reed Galen said, "The Lincoln Project will not sit by and watch as companies like Toyota, companies that have benefited from America's economic strength and freedom, give money to politicians who are working to overthrow that same system. This is no longer a fight between two political parties or entrenched interests. It is no less than a fight to preserve American democracy." And so, lo and behold, Toyota saw the light of reason. Toyota spokesperson Edward Lewis told the Detroit News, "We're actively listening to our stakeholders, and at this time we have decided to stop contributing to those members of Congress who contested the certification of certain states in the 2020 election." In other words, Toyota is now resoundingly closing the barn door after the horse is somewhere three or four states away, or maybe at a QAnon meeting. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we take our victories where we can find them, right? Yeah. Thank you, Sparky. Let's check in with the Green News Report and see if we can get some conversation radio going. Jump right in. Conversation's fine.
It's Thursday, July 8, 2021.
Wildfire disaster in British Columbia. It's in the place that just recorded the three hottest days ever in this country.
While we were out, historic heat wave kills hundreds, sparks wildfires in Pacific Northwest and Canada.
Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes.
ExxonMobil lobbyists caught on tape admitting company funds climate denial front groups. Plus,
tropical storm Elsa slamming ashore, drenching Florida's Gulf Coast.
Record breaker Elsa makes landfall in Florida.
All of those broken records and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
In other news, the country is as hot as hell. So at least Cosby has a preview of the afterlife.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we've been gone for a week or two. I know you got a lot to catch up on, so I will shut up and keep my snark to a minimum.
Okay.
Maybe.
First up, the first hurricane of the 2021 season, now Tropical Storm Elsa, made landfall on Florida's west coast on Wednesday, killing at least one person. Elsa broke the record for the earliest fifth named storm, set just last year in the historic 2020 hurricane season. While we were out, an historic heat wave last week parked over the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia, shattered all-time high temperature records, closed schools and businesses, melted and broke critical infrastructure, and killed at least 800 people, likely more. A tiny town in British Columbia hit a shocking 121 degrees, breaking Canada's all-time highest national temperature. That town was destroyed by wildfire the next day.
Let me underscore 121 degrees. In Canada.
Canadian fire crews are currently battling more than 180 wildfires in British Columbia alone. The extreme heat wave contributed to extreme fire behavior in California as well. The National Interagency Fire Center said this week that 30,000 fires have burned in the U.S., nearly 1.5 million acres so far this year, more than this time last year, the worst fire season in modern history.
Things keep getting worse around here, don't they?
Marine biologists estimate that a billion shallow water marine animals cooked to death in the Northwest heat wave, finding tens of thousands of dead clams, snails, mussels, and sea stars off the coast of Vancouver. And yes, man-made climate change is a factor. A new study released Wednesday by the World Weather Attribution Network has concluded that the historic heat wave would have been, quote, virtually impossible without the influence of man-made climate change. The researchers warn that unless governments reduce greenhouse gas emissions, such extreme heat waves will become more common.
I'm starting to think this whole climate change thing may not be a hoax.
In politics, two ExxonMobil lobbyists recorded by Greenpeace, posing as a corporate recruiter, admitted that the oil giant is secretly and aggressively blocking climate action, funding the climate science denial industry and dark money front groups to discredit the science linking fossil fuels to climate change. Here's Exxon's top lobbyist, Kevin McCoy.
Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes. Did we join some of these shadow groups to work against some of the early efforts? Yes, that's true. But there's nothing illegal about that. You know, we were looking out for our investments.
So not illegal, but completely, entirely immoral. Well done, top Exxon lobbyist.
McCoy said Exxon pretends to support a carbon tax while working secretly to ensure it will never pass. He also boasted that Exxon hopes to kill President Biden's infrastructure jobs plan to transition the nation to clean energy and harden infrastructure against the climate impacts that Exxon itself is partly responsible for causing.
Years ago, when ExxonMobil started calling for a carbon tax, I said they were doing it because they knew it would never pass, and it was all a publicity stunt.
And you were right.
Well, that happens.
But there is some good news. Congressional Democrats used the Congressional Review Act to restore Obama-era rules requiring the oil and gas industry to stop methane leaks, which former President Trump had canceled. Canada announced it will ban the sale of new conventional gas and diesel-burning cars and light-duty trucks starting in 2035, targeting net-zero emissions nationwide by 2050. Britain moved up its deadline to end the use of coal-fired electricity to October 2024. Bangladesh canceled plans to build 10 coal-fired power plants, citing cost, and will instead build cheaper renewable energy projects.
Nice.
And finally, regulators in New Jersey approved two new offshore wind projects to generate clean energy to power more than a million homes.
See? It's not all bad.
Right.
Well done. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we're all getting caught up on, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I can't find comfort.
Good to have him back. I love it. And you were right. Well, that happens sometimes. Brad has absolutely perfected the fine art of self-deprecation. We are an hour and a half into the program. The program will be brief, be foreshortened this evening, not brief. You can't call anything brief when somebody filibusters for an hour and a half. But I'll be knocking off at 7 Eastern time. I've got a committee meeting this evening. Trying to give back. Trying to, it's my activist nature. So I have my once-a-month meeting this evening at 7. They were kind enough to move it to 7 from 6:30 so that I can get in an extra half hour of broadcasting. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Charlene, so very, very much. Thank you. We are half done with Nydia's Sue the PEIA challenge. There's $25 more to go on that, and then there's Stephen New York's 6 plus 4 equals 10 challenge, and that would that'll knock us down to, well, considerably less terrible, but I got massive amounts of bills that have to be paid this month, and I don't mean, I mean, I'm talking about the internet bill, the phone, everything that supports this program, and a couple other things, you know, health insurance, things like that. I'm so excited to have my 3 gatekeeper letters, but it won't mean a damn thing if I can't keep my health insurance. That's all. I mean, it just is what it is. But thank you so much, Charlene, for jumping in, and hopefully others will join in, and we'll finish that off, finish those two challenges off in the next 28 minutes and change. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. John in Central PA said, Toyota stopped contributing to insurrectionist campaigns. Bullshit. How many companies said that and quietly reneged? That is something that happened. That's absolutely true. I want to think maybe that Toyota is for real in this, though, because A, they've got a spotlight on them and they're being watched. CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, is not going to just, oh, okay, they said they'd quit.
Yeah.
Oh, and something else, and it wasn't, I was surprised it wasn't in the Green News Report. Just a quick update. We have been inundated, and I've been counseling against falling for it for many years now. Every so often, somebody will come along with an article that says, coal's dead! Nobody's going to use coal anymore! We're done with coal! Turns out, especially coming out of, we aren't really, but we're trying to reopen even as the pandemic continues to burn all across the globe. Look up the Lambda variant. Stephen New York shared an interview regarding that. It emerged in Peru, and it's scary as shit. Lambda. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, eta, theta, mu. Wow, we're up to Lambda. That's a lot of variants. Trying to emerge from the shutdowns, countries that we have roundly praised for their commitment to clean, green, sustainable energy, yeah, maybe not so much. Germany, for instance, is going big back into the coal-burning game. And, well, some of that coal is probably going to come from here. That's part of the reason that Wyoming and Montana were so upset and tried to sue all the way to the Supreme Court to compel Washington to build them, within the state of Washington, mind you, to compel them to build them a coal terminal so they can ship coal to China. But the point is, it's still getting on boats, coal is, in places like Newport News and Norfolk, Virginia. And remember, when you say Norfolk, you don't have to say Norfolk because you're afraid people will think you're saying fuck. It's Norfolk. What do they say there? We don't drink, nor smoke, nor fuck. Norfolk. Coal's getting on boats in places like Norfolk and Massachusetts and Mobile, Alabama. And it takes that long ride. And it's not just North American coal. They're still tormenting the earth in places like Colombia. China's still mining. They're still mining in Australia. And they're still there, you know, because there are people with a lot of money who are still more than willing to burn up the planet in the name of corporate profits. Yeah. As to Toyota, Steve in New York says, you can bet your ass, however, that once they think the spotlight has burned out, they will be contributing again. Well, sure, because that's the fuel upon which American politics runs, unfortunately. But, okay, so we need a funny. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and then there's already been enough thorns. We need a funny. Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office issued a statement. They were responding to the new lawsuit that even a first-year law student wouldn't file. The new lawsuit that Nitwit Nero has filed against
big tech firms, definitely big tech firms. Big tech firms have censored your beloved president, the big tech firms.
He's at the front end, because this is a hustle. He's at the front end of a class action lawsuit claiming that they censored him. Up at his tacky-ass golf club in New Jersey, Nitwit Nero found a microphone and said,
our case will provide this censorship is unlawful, it's unconstitutional, and it's completely un-American.
No, dumbass, it's not. Google and Twitter and Facebook are not the government of the United States. The First Amendment protects American citizens from having their free speech rights, but you know this, suppressed or limited by the government of the United States. I mean, this is so stupid. They filed the suit in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida because I go,
hey, I think I appointed one of those judges. Didn't I appoint one of those judges?
And there's another grift involved with the suit. The
America First Policy Institute.
And they ostensibly exist to promote Nitwit Nero's fascist urges. Yeah. And so that thing's going forward. And it's all just... Trader Tot tried to fundraise for the lawsuit on social media. That didn't work out too particularly well. But the best part of all of this, like I said, because we need a giggle, is the response from Nancy Pelosi's office. I guess it's just catnip. You can't resist the opportunity to sort of needle him a little bit and go, hey, dumbass, I'm still in office. I'm the third most powerful person in the American government, and you're not. And so in the statement that the Speaker's office issued, they wrote, twice impeached Florida retiree and de facto leader of the Republican Party, Donald Trump joined House Republicans today in disrespecting the Capitol Police and other law enforcement officers who valiantly defended the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, decrying how rioters are being treated unbelievably unfairly now that they're facing legal consequences for their actions. And so in the statement, there was a link to the lawsuit about the stupid lawsuit. And they also quoted Nitwit Nero referring to the January 6th attack on constitutional governance as
an unfortunate event where the people who participated are being treated unbelievably unfairly. There were no guns in the Capitol except for the gun that shot Ashley Babbitt. There was no reason for that.
Well, Ashley Babbitt, remember, was invading the Capitol of the United States in an insurrection aimed at overturning constitutional governance in the United States. So, I mean, but he left that part out. And going on in the statement, the speaker said, like Donald, House Republicans have shown time and again that they stand with traitors, not with our law enforcement. Ouch. But it's that first line, twice impeached Florida retiree. Ow. It stings. It stings a lot. And so big thanks to an anonymous friend. Thank you very kindly. The remainder of Nidia's challenge has been met. Steve's challenge has been met. And so that means 14, 3, 2. And then so that takes us down to $342 to go to get up even. $342. Thank you so very kindly. Twice impeached Florida retiree and de facto leader of the Republican Party. Ooh, they hate that. They hate that part. I wonder if that's a needle job because, you know, everybody's playing so nicely with Dick and a Wig Cheney. I wonder if that's a little bit of a, nah, they're playing nicely. That wasn't a dig at Adam Kinzinger and Dick and a Wig Cheney. No. Twice impeached Florida retiree. Yeah. Oh, and let's see, where'd it go? Sidney Powell. Remember Sidney Powell? Remember Lynn Wood? They were hailed into court in Michigan for a sanctions hearing for their pettifogging stupidity. Yeah, they tried to get out of showing up. It's worth remembering that back in the, and he features as a character in True Grit, but back in the late 19th century, there was a U.S. District Judge in Fort Smith, Arkansas, whose name was Parker. And in fact, he was referred to as the Hanging Judge. And Judge Linda Parker in Michigan was hearing this disciplinary hearing for Lynn Wood and Kraken lawyer Sidney Powell. And they each said their lawyers asked to keep them from having to be, because, you know, if you're there before the court can do things to you. Mm-hmm. They wanted to appear by counsel, by their lawyers, without showing up. And Kraken lawyer Donald Campbell wrote a motion saying, since the court entered that order, movements retained counsel. They therefore asked the court to indicate whether they may appear via counsel. And within a matter of seconds, almost, Hanging Judge Linda Parker in Michigan entered a one-word order. Denied! And so they're going to have to appear in front of her. Plaintiffs ask this court, she wrote in December, plaintiffs ask this court to ignore the orderly statutory scheme established to challenge elections and to ignore the will of millions of voters. This the court cannot and will not do. The people have spoken. So there may yet be some fun to be had with those two pettifogging bozos. Okay, so Jeremy and Steve are both clamoring, saying, yeah, that's a remote cowbell. Steve in New York. Hello, where's Nancy's cowbell? Twice impeached Florida retiree. Jeremy noting, she can't hear it, but goddamn, she gets a cowbell for twice impeached Florida retiree. Damn straight she does, because, you know, he's retired and she ain't. Mm-hmm. Steve in New York says, I know this will surprise the hell out of you. I saw an interview with Lawrence Tribe. Apparently, he subscribes to Trump's mass texts. He said he got a fundraising text literally as Trump was at his press conference announcing the lawsuit. I got it, too. It's right there in the inbox. And it's, well, it's hilariously pathetic. Hey, thank you. Thank you, Smitty. Smitty just jumped in. Smitty hadn't been feeling well. Thank you. I hope you get to feeling much better, Smitty. And that gets us down to three seventeen. We're almost caught up with Tuesday. Thank you, Smitty. Thank you so much. But yeah, he's suing Facebook and Google and Twitter. And sadly, nobody's going to be Rule 11 for this. I don't know, maybe. But he doesn't have any better lawyers here than he did. No, because, among other things, he bragged about how he's gonna sue Twitter and Google with the help of some tobacco lawyers. Yeah, no. Matt saw it too. It's my lawsuit against Facebook, Twitter, and Google. It's all just a grift. May he be struck with lightning. No, Matt says it's all just a grift. May he be struck with lightning post haste. Hold up that mashy niblick there, your Trumpiness.
Did you watch my historic press conference? I announced that I am suing Facebook, Twitter, and Google for unconstitutionally censoring me, and because me is in all caps, and other conservatives around the nation. My team is demanding an end to the shadow banning, a stop to the silencing, a stop to the blacklisting, banishing, and canceling. We will not rest until we've achieved a major victory, all caps again, for the American people. This will be an uphill battle, friend, and I cannot do it alone. I need you to stand with me and fight back. Please contribute immediately.
Yeah. It's a grift. Yeah, Matt, it is. It's a grift. Rat fart! Yeah. Arthur also, and well-known golf cheat, Donald Trump. Yeah. Oh, speaking of golf cheats, it was it's a while back. It was 2015. Wasn't even president yet. When a guy named Andrew Halder got shit-face drunk and was served booze at the tacky New Jersey golf club. He was drunk when they served him. 4 miles from the club, he flipped his car, killed his dad, who was ejected from the car, wound up pleading guilty to vehicle manslaughter, got 3 years of probation for it. And then the state of New Jersey came after Bedminster. And,
we'll sue and we'll win.
And he's lost again. And these places are suffering financially. I mean, they are they're sucking big time. They're hemorrhaging money. And so now, Colts Neck, New Jersey Golf Club. They're going to pay $400,000 in an administrative fine for over-serving Andrew Halder. They and the other two New Jersey golf clubs in return get to keep their liquor licenses. They pleaded no contest to administrative charges that the State Division of Alcoholic Beverages filed in 2019. And on top of it all, it wasn't just that they were serving people who were already drunk. They also violated New Jersey law by serving things other than beer from the beer carts on the golf course. You know, you know how it works. I mean, there's usually a cute guy or cute girl in a golf cart who drives the beer cart around. And that way you can keep getting shit-faced while you're three-putting your way to happiness. And so were they going around serving your gin and tonic? Because theoretically, as long as you're just serving beer, nobody's actually smashed on the golf course. This is, of course, a lie. But it kind of pisses me off, this story. Because if the state of New Jersey had followed through, they would have been able to pull the liquor license from Colts Neck, and they would have gotten the liquor license at the other two clubs he owns in New Jersey, Bedminster and Pine Hill. And that would have all but put him out of business. Because nobody who's willing to play golf at a Trump golf course is going to play golf at a Trump golf course where you can't get a cold beer. I guess the claim would have been that they were being singled out for being Trump golf courses. But God damn it, sometimes you fight the fight. Had the liquor license revocation gone through, golf industry experts said that would have removed a major source of the club's revenue. They make more money selling beer than they do with people playing golf. And the $400,000 penalty they're paying is 6.5% of its total revenue in 2020. Could we not have gone for 10%? Oh, come on. Maybe the New Jersey contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation can raise a stink. Or at least write a strongly worded email to the Alcoholic Beverage Commission of the state of New Jersey. And I don't know if I've pointed it out. I think I have. This from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, throwing shade. No one throws shade quite like a San Franciscan. Twice impeached Florida retiree and de facto head of the Republican Party. Do you have any idea how much Jim Shorts Jordan and Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball and Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert despise Nancy Pelosi? And part of the reason they despise her is they know, as Matt points out, they know they can't even attempt to throw shade at her without, you know, without getting shade back of a nature and quality more akin to that of a neutron star. Just suck them right into the event horizon and they'll never be seen again. But no, I don't know if I've mentioned it. I think I have. But I'm a proud patient of Planned Parenthood. That's who manages my transition care, my medical transition care. And they are kind and they are decent. They are understanding. I would almost go so far as to say that I think in this day and age, if you work for Planned Parenthood, you are engaged in a labor of love. And so I take it personally when these assholes attack Planned Parenthood. I always respected the organization, always knew that it deserved respect and not reproach. I had a chat with them yesterday. It's all telemedicine. But Washington State, and you know, every time I have an appointment with them, I tell my provider, please stay safe. Because they don't, at the Planned Parenthood that I'm dealing with, they don't even do abortions. They manage, they manage birth control, They do mammograms, pap smears. They help trans people like me move toward authenticity. But every day that any individual goes to work at a women's reproductive health care center, whether it's Planned Parenthood or otherwise, but Planned Parenthood is the one that has the great big target on it because of hooting monstrosities, grunting barbarians like Jim Shorts Jordan and the rest of the maggot caucus. Every day that these brave, brave people go to work, they do so knowing it could be their last because there's some asshole out there who's been stochastically weaponized from the stochastic terrorism that emanates from the Republican Party and the multi-billion dollar industry that is the fetus fetish industry. Every day they go to work could be their last. And I always ask in my appointments, are you okay? You all right? And I thank them. I thank the whole staff. Because they saved my life. And so it caused the little hairs to stand up on the back of my neck when I read the story out of the Spokesman Review of Spokane, Washington. A right-wing fetus fetish asshole who had been turned into a weaponized domestic terrorist caused $25,000 worth of damage to the Planned Parenthood facility in Spokane Valley, Washington, on Saturday. He used rocks to smash 14 windows. Before he was arrested, police actually showed up and arrested him. And when one of the officers responding showed up, the guy was grunting about, "It's a bunch of baby killers!" And it was probably a response to a court ruling recently when a judge told a group called the Church at Planned Parenthood, "No, y'all, you can just stand outside and shriek outside Planned Parenthood and call yourself a church because the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States has been reduced to nothing more than a life support system for the fucking fetus fetish industry." The judge told them to get their protest 35 feet away from the clinic. And Planned Parenthood had to go so far as to sue the church because they were interfering with the constitutionally guaranteed rights of people coming to the clinic, not to mention just flat-out criminally intimidating the patients and the staff. Don't go to the website. You'll probably get some noxious virus, but they've got a website for the church at Planned Parenthood. And they say, "We are a worship service at the gates of hell. The church at Planned Parenthood is a gathering of Christians for the worship of God and the corporate prayer for repentance of this nation." Corporate prayer, really? Repentance for the apathetic church and repentance of our blood guiltiness in this abortion holocaust. Yeah, you think we could get, you know, the Anti-Defamation League on the blower and ask him to please note that at the exercise of a woman's constitutional right to attend to the workings of her own reproductive system are in no wise anything remotely resembling the Holocaust. So the spokesman for Spokane Valley Planned Parenthood said, no, this wasn't a random act, not at all. He said, "You can't escape that in terms of motive, the injunction, this coming right after is certainly alarming." And of course, the church at Planned Parenthood is a stochastic domestic terrorist organization because, well, they're trying to, they obviously succeeded in motivating $25,000 worth of damage on a Saturday It's not quite what they're going for. They're waiting for the firebombing and the death and the murder. In the name of the little fetuses. Jesus, save us from your fucking followers. And so that's the program for this evening. Friday on the front porch will be full length and everything. One Thursday a month, I have to take these meetings. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation as much as I have. Thank you very kindly to our pal Todd. Thank you, Todd, for jumping in. We are down to 311 bucks to finish fundraising up to this date. There's a whopping bill out there that scares the daylights out of me, but you know, we'll do what we can. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Nydia. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Smitty. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Thank you all for jumping in this evening. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. Encourage others to get theirs. As President Biden pointed out, getting America vaccinated is going to be a matter of neighbors talking to neighbors and helping us all figure out, helping the vaccine hesitant figure out that they're better off vaccinated than dead. In the meantime, use your first line defenses. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep some with you at all times, purse or pocket. Wear your gloves if you think that's prudent. Sometimes it really is. Maintain your social distance in groups where you don't know if people are vaccinated. Wear your mask when you don't know if people are vaccinated. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes burbling and gurbling and babbling and shrieking and moaning and hooting and grunting at you, hollering, "Baby killers!" Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later.